Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the At-Large Ad Hoc Working Group on the Transition of U.S. Government Stewardship of the IANA Function on Wednesday, the 26th November at 1300 UTC. On the English channel, we have Olivia Crepin-LeBlanc, Eduardo Diaz, Gordon Chilcott, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Sean ODDG, Yasuchi Kitamura, Leanne Sanchez, Jean-Jacques Supernat, Alan Greenberg, and Christopher Wilkinson. On the Spanish channel, we have Fatima Cambronero, Aida Noble, and Alberto Soto. We have apologies from Tijani Benjama and Mohammed Al-Bashir. From staff, we have myself, Terry Agnew. Our Spanish interpreter today will be Veronica. I would like to remind all participants to please state their name, not only for transcription purposes, but also for a Spanish interpretation. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Terry. Have we missed anybody in the roll call by any chance?
Hi, Olivier. This is Heidi. I'm here as well.
Thank you, Heidi. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Tomohiro Fujisaki. I'm online. Can you hear me?
Yes, Tomohiro. Welcome. Tomohiro Fujisaki as well. Thank you. And I think that's it. Okay, well, thanks very much. Welcome, everybody, to this call. As I mentioned just a moment ago, it's going to be a busy call with a lot of topics to discuss. We'll start with a review of the ICG, the IANA Coordination Group Activities, a short review of the call that took place a few hours ago. Then after that, a quick review of whether there has been any progress in the other operational communities. And then the meat of the work today, the main part, and that's the follow-up to the face-to-face meeting that took place in Frankfurt. We already had a call to follow up. This call here will review the flow chart, specifically looking at the IANA periodic review team function and the IANA contracting entity part of the flow chart. I was hoping that we would be able to have a look at the first draft of the overall document from the community working group, which was supposed to come out, I think, last night European time, but it's still not in our mailboxes yet. It might appear whilst we have this call. And then afterwards, based on a number of discussions that have been taking place on the community working group, a number of important questions are in front of us, and we're going to have to discuss these and what our point of view is. And finally, as you know, the RFP4 and RFP5 working parts of the working group have started their work as well, and we need to have a progress update and see how that is doing if we have members of RFP4 and RFP5. Any additional business that anybody wishes to add to this agenda? I notice Alan Greenberg has put his hand up, so Alan, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. I guess question, are we planning to accept the proposal as it is presented, as we believe it will be presented, and answer these minor, what are essentially minor questions, or also present something, essentially saying why we have problems with the proposal overall? Now, I understand I was supposed to send something out by yesterday and it didn't go out yet, but I'm just a little concerned if we're simply essentially rolling over and saying, okay, this is the proposal, presuming everyone else will accept it also, or if we're going to do something, presenting our case why we believe that, or at least why some of us believe, that this is not the proposal we should have been submitting. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for this, Alan. It's Olivier speaking, and I'd like just to ask you a question on the question you've asked here. Are you meaning with regards to the publishing of RFP3 or of the current proposal, or are you meaning with regards to the public commenting that you will be doing?
I guess both. Assuming it's not going to change, if ALAC as a whole is accepting this, that's fine. I'm not objecting. I can have a a different position from the one ALAC presents through the IANA Issues Group, but the sense of the group in Frankfurt was that we had some significant problems with the external oversight body and whether it was viable for a whole bunch of reasons. And I guess I'd like to see us commenting on that as a whole. As I said, I will get my comment out somehow, I hope, by today. I was planning on doing it after the release of the document to see what it actually said, which, as you point out, hasn't come yet. It's not a decision necessarily to make today, but I think it should be on the agenda to discuss, which is why I raised my hand when we're talking about the agenda.
Thanks for this, Alan. Olivier speaking. And I think there is a part of the agenda that touches on this. And this is exactly the discussions that we are having here, the important questions: NTIA backdrop function, contracting function, link with accounting process, how do we want this? Do we support one or the other? And maybe we can add in this, of course, the questions, of course, that we have, which are specifically about the review team, the contracting entity, the whole thing. My sense, and I'll just give you my response here, I certainly think the ALAC should be responding to the public comment period. And one of the reasons why, in fact, we have moved the webinars that were in place for this, where a more general IANA stewardship transition webinar has been moved forward to the 3rd of December, and then on the 10th of December, there is a more advanced webinar where I would suggest that this group here presents its case to the ALAC as to what we think should be in that public comment and see what kind of support and feedback we get.
Okay, I'm fine
point.
With that.
Thank you, Alan. Next is Fatima Cambronero.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Fatima for the record. I have a topic that I would like to include, and this is regarding the need of having a text. I don't know if you want me to explain this, or perhaps we can leave it for the end of the call.
Thank you, Fatima. Just to let us know the need for having a text about what?
Thus, the text would be, this is Fatima speaking, the text would be for the flow chart with an explanation regarding this flow chart. Because my concern is that while we are moving forward, it turns difficult for us to understand the flow chart, and I imagine how difficult this would be to explain in the webinar and for our community. It would be very difficult to understand for our community. So perhaps it would be possible to have a text and... we asked already for the text, but it was not included. So perhaps we can draft a text to attach to these flowcharts for a better understanding. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Fatima, for this. What I would suggest then is to have this topic on the next call that we will have, the call next week, since the webinar that we are looking at will be on the 10th. So we have another week to be able to draft that text. Would that be a possible solution for you?
This is Fatima speaking. Yes, I do agree, Olivier. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for this, Fatima. And so let's go now to the action items, having adopted the agenda as it is. And the action items are all complete, so there's no need to read through all of them. Most of them are down to the linking of document sources, draft, etc. Maybe I should ask Terry to let us know again, or maybe to point us to where this page for document sources is. And I know that there is also an equivalent page of the latest drafts of documents that is shown on the part of the wiki that deals specifically with the naming issues. And this, I think, is also linked to our own page. In any case, we have a link in our agenda to all of these pages, and you will have noticed that the agenda is takes some of the elements from the previous weeks with a lot of links. Might be a little bit confusing at first when reading through it, but in fact what we have is four reference meeting structure and working groups. It's got all of the different links to all sorts of information underneath there that would be of importance or of help to us. Are there any comments or questions on the action items that we have at the moment displaying in the Adobe Connect? No comments or questions? Okay, let's move then to the next part of the agenda, and that's the review of the IANA coordination group activities. We have an apology from Mohamed El-Bashir, but Jean-Jacques Subrana is with us, and there was a call just a few hours ago from the IANA coordination group. And so to explain to us and provide us an update, I'll ask you, Jean-Jacques Subrana, to take the floor, please.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques speaking. Yes, the agenda you have seen, so I won't go through that again. But the interesting thing, item, I think, was about process, how the plan devised by the ICG would be forwarded to NTIA via the IANA, and whether ICANN would then think it necessary to modify that text or not. So we have had indications from the ICANN board that they have had a discussion about this point, and that now it is being indicated to us that the ICANN board would receive the plan and transmit it to the NTIA without any modification. And if and when there were some objections or difficulties on the part of the ICANN board, then the latter would make it known to the NTIA in the form of a separate letter. And this would not affect the content of the ICG proposal or plan. So a couple of remarks about this. The first is that the first proposal about such a system was made by yours truly in the very early stages. I think it was at the London meeting shortly after the formation of the ICG. And this had been discussed privately with a couple of members of the ICANN board, and I had argued that it would be bad policy and not well received if the ICANN board were to tamper, in other words, to modify at all, the plan put forward by the ICG on behalf of all the contributing communities, and that if really the board had an objection or some difficulty, it should make it known in the form of a separate letter. But it seems that the board is now comfortable with that scheme of things. And another interesting thing is that there is also an understanding on the part of the ICANN board, it seems, that of course they would not wait for things to come to that regrettable state where there would be a misunderstanding or a strong objection on the part of ICANN to something proposed by the ICG. So I think there is an understanding now that there would be, of course, all necessary consultations between the ICG and ICANN before the transmission of the final plan. Now, that being said, I would like to underline that there is a strong feeling on the part of most of the people who expressed their opinion on the ICG call a few hours ago that we should not make a special case of ICAP, board or staff, in accommodating them in a special way with a special consultation process, etc. It has been said in our earlier papers that the ICG considers that ICANN is part of the community and has ample possibility to input comments, objections, proposals, etc., in the same way as any other part of the worldwide internet community, and that in a timely fashion. So this is not in contradiction with anything else. It's simply a clarification, because on the part of some participants, there was the feeling that we should create, in a way, a special consultation mechanism specifically with the ICANN board. But now I think I can state that the majority on the ICG feels that this would not be appropriate. So, to sum up what I have just presented to you, I would say that, yes, it is of course essential that there be consultations between the ICG and ICANN at an appropriate time and early enough to flag down any possible important discrepancies or difficulties. But then that is not to be done with a special privileged mechanism. It has to be part of the general mechanism for all the ICANN global community, all the internet global community. So I won't go into details about this, but I tried to summarize really the sense, the flow of that discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this update, Jean-Jacques Subrenard. I have a, it's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. I just have one question for you. You mentioned the ICG would not make a special case of ICANN. In the past, the ICG has used the system of public comment, maybe not the ICANN public comment, but certainly the method of public comment that ICANN makes use of to receive comments from the community. Is this likely to continue?
Yes, to the best of my knowledge, that will be the case. Sorry, this is Jean-Jacques for responding. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions on this by anyone on the call? Okay, I note a sentence from Sean Ojedeji mentioning that it's definitely not necessary to create a separate consultation with the ICANN board. Agreement with you, Jean-Jacques. Are there any other news from this call or with regards to the ICG that you would like to share with this working group, Jean-Jacques?
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jacques again. Yes, there was also heads up by the three directly affected operational communities to say whereabouts they were in the process of coming up with plans which would be sent to the ICG. But that was a very general discussion, nothing specific. And the general sense I got of the discussion is that everyone is really doing what is possible in order to give this input in a timely fashion so that there would be no discrepancy between communities as far as the overall calendar is concerned. That was one point. The other point I would like to add is that it was not an agenda item, but I think you may be interested to know that as far as I'm aware, there have been a few days delay in the official appointment of the unit which is to be selected for the purpose of ensuring secretarial service for the ICG. this due to some administrative necessity, and I think that the announcement should be made quite shortly about the choice, and therefore the selected candidate should become operational very, very shortly after that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Jean-Jacques Subrenard. So are there any questions from the working group regarding the ICG? Seeing no one put their hand up. I thank you, Jean-Jacques, and we'll move now to the next part of our agenda, and that's the review of the other operational community progress. Has there been any specific progress that members of the working group here would like to report? The floor is open. I don't see anyone putting their hand up. The only thing I can report is that there has been one more version of the IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force submission. I think I have shared this with the working group, so no other movement since then. Sean Ojedeji, you have the floor.
Hello.
Thank you, Olivier. This is
now we can hear you. Go ahead.
So just to reiterate what I said, going to be the consultation for AFNEC tomorrow in the morning. I earlier shared the URL, but I'm not sure I saw it on yet. But I can look for it again later. Maybe I'll put the mailing list. And again, I also noticed that the CRIS team is now complete. So the LACNIC have also selected their CRIS members. So it means that all the five IRs have now selected their members. So I guess very soon we'll start hearing some progress. Then I observed that the IRN CRIS members, they have actually developed a draft for that their community. So that's just few info that I think some of us may not have.
Thank you for this update, Sean, and good luck with the meetings tomorrow with AFRINIC. I gather there are sessions that will deal specifically with this topic. Are there?
Yes. That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Thank you for that. Any other update? I guess you have touched on the update which I was going to touch on, and that's the completion of the CRISP, the committee that will put together the input from the different regional internet registries into one proposal. And as you rightly said, Aaron seems to have move forward in drafting the proposal, and we'll probably see some movement in the next few weeks. I was going to quickly ask you one thing. I'm in correspondence with Patrick Feldstrom, who will be the main person behind our first webinar with the at-large community on the 3rd of December, and I have suggested to him that he also mentions the progress of the different operational communities, if there is progress by then. I was just going to ask whether you thought that was helpful, maybe, or whether we should keep the first webinar very basic. I just have a concern that there would be very little connection between a first webinar that just describes the IANA functions and a second webinar where we are going to be digging specifically into the ALAC position for the naming part of the ANA. Are there any comments on this? Being no comments, I gather that it's okay with everyone here. So let's move on to the main part of our call. And that's going to be the discussion on the face-to-face meeting that we had. We have a link in the agenda to this flow chart that we were looking at during our last call with the characteristics of the entities, and we had gone on page one, we had gone through the IANA Customer Standing Committee, the IANA Periodic Review Team, the Independent Appeals Panel Policy Implementation, and we had not touched on the IANA Contracting Entity. And so what I would suggest is that we will just, at the moment, just describe the IANA Contracting Entity and then start our discussion focusing specifically, based on the wishes of this group during our last call, specifically reviewing the IANA Periodic Review Team and reviewing the IANA Contracting Entity. It looks as though these two will yield considerable considerable power. But before we do that, I wanted to just open the floor, and I see Sean is fast on the trigger, open the floor to comments on the first page of this this flowchart. Sean Ajedeji, you have the floor.
Thank you, Olivier. I had to quickly raise my hand because it's almost my time is almost exhausted. I have just 3 minutes more on this meeting. I want to mention that I think we need to, I think one of the things that we agreed some time ago was that we'll follow through with this contracting thing as an option. So I think we have not actually agreed on our own principle. We need to understand, are we saying that, okay, we agree with this contracting part? Are we agreeing with this model in the first place before we even start reviewing its components? I think we should have an agreement on what model this working group wants, because this model which has been presented was, I personally sense was not the preferred one, and it could just be one that could be compromised. So I'm thinking, shouldn't we also have our own position in terms of which does not necessarily have anything to do with the current model which is in front of us, because we in the first place have that this was just an option. So I was thinking we should also discuss possible options, and then prioritize, and then before we go into this particular option that we're looking at right now. However, having said that, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Olivier speaking, and one has to bear in mind that not everyone on this call was at the face-to-face meeting in Frankfurt. So I think the first step was to just explain what was being proposed by some of the members of the group and what we had worked on in Frankfurt. I realized that we've already looked at that in the last week, but specifically the entities themselves, the contracting entity is something we haven't looked at yet. But it's good to mention, yes, that there was certainly no support from the at-large members of this committee for a contracting entity for various reasons, and that there was an alternative proposal that was prepared. And I'll let Alan speak to that in a moment. But I think the first thing was to just say, well, the contracting entity, as it's currently on this flowchart, is one which is a very lean organization that is adequately financed, that apparently doesn't have any employees, that just has, as far as I understood it, some lawyers that will just be signing a contract or verifying contracts and then signing them. So it's a something as minimal as possible and solely a counterpart in the contract, as they call it. And it acts on the recommendations and the on the direction of the IANA periodic review team. And I believe from what is on the page here, also the IANA Customer Review Committee and the Independent Appeals Panel. So that's how it works, and that's how it receives its instructions. It needs to take input from other IANA communities, numbers, and protocols. And I wasn't quite sure how that fitted together either, since there has been no real discussion about how this proposal will interface with any of the other proposals that are received, bearing in mind that I think at least one of the other proposals doesn't mention the creation of any body or any new organization. So it's going to be an interesting set of negotiations there. So that's the contracting entity. And before we launch into whether we want that or not want that, I wondered whether there were any questions from people on this call regarding the proposed IANA contracting entity on this draft.
This is Eduardo. I'm not in computer. Can I talk?
Yes, please go ahead, Eduardo. You have the floor.
The main issue here I see is this contracting entity, which I still do not understand. I do not understand how you can have a contracting entity with no staff. I don't know how you do that. But let's say that is the way it's going to happen. It's something that is on paper. If we look at the flowchart, the group that really is going to direct this contracting entity is supposed to be a multi-stakeholder group, which has not been identified yet, and people are talking about if it's within ICANN or outside of ICANN. And depending on how that ends up in the final proposal, we haven't seen what final the proposal is going to be. It's going to be hard to decide one way or another. But I think the main thing here is this contracting entity. What is it? Where is it located? What is it? The piece of paper only that says contracting. I asked Craig about this when I was in Frankfurt, and I quite did not understand what he was saying. This is really something. I'm not a legal person, but it would be very interesting how you do something like that. Thank you.
Thank you for this, Eduardo. Next is Fatima Fatima Cambronero, and then we've got Alan Greenberg afterwards. Fatima, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Olivier. This is Fatima for the record. Sorry, but I got lost. Are we going to review of this, or are we going to deal with the contracting entity? Now, when it comes to the contracting entity, I was reading Jonathan's email explaining some doubts, and as far as I understand, this contracted entity will be an independent entity outside ICANN. And the composition is not clearly defined, but as far as I know, it will be composed by multi-stakeholders and multi-stakeholders coming from ICANN. As it was being said, it will be in charge of entering into contracts, and it will have no staff. Now, of course, there are many questions, at least from my point of view, because it will only deal with contracts and the duration of contracts and the review of contracts. But then we don't know what happens if there is a conflict. This will be sent to the review team, but it's not very clear. So I think it should be clearly specified, the review function of a contract, because in some of the emails that have been circulated, it is mentioned a conflict of interest, and we don't know if this is going to be formed by members of the ACs or SOs,
because we know a contract. We know we have a contract with ICANN. The contract will be entered into between ICANN as well. So we need to, if we are going to discuss about the duration, then I will be explaining that. If not, I will stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Fatima. Next is Alan Dieberg.
Sorry, I was on mute. I guess I'm also not sure what we're doing at this point. I can raise a half a dozen or more questions regarding the, you know, exactly what they mean. And I guess I have a little bit more clarity on some of the parts than some other people. But that clarity just raises other questions. So, Olivier, give me some guidance. Do you want me to identify the concerns I have, or and things that would need clarification in the extreme, or I'm not quite sure what you're asking to do here.
Thank you for this, Alan. It's Olivier speaking. I was trying to follow the agenda as such. So first, review, just like what we did last week, review the different four entities that are listed on this page, and we have just done that. I've just enumerated what the IANA contracting entity was supposed to be doing according to the proposal. Again, according to the
right
proposal that is on the desk at the moment. And then, of course, we need to start digging into saying, well, what do we find wrong with those things, and what questions do we have? I asked questions at the end of the meeting during the Frankfurt face-to-face meeting. You asked questions. I haven't seen any answer to those. I haven't even seen any work going towards actually defining those things. And I would personally find it particularly poor judgment to think that the IANA contracting entity, for example, if one just puts this under the carpet, then one will be able to just say at the end, well, we don't have enough time to think of anything else than a separate organization that will have to be created. I already note that there is some confusion within our group. Fatima mentioned earlier that the contracting entity would be multi-stakeholder, and we have would have members of supporting organizations and advisory committees on it. And that's my understanding, is that it's not the case. The IANA periodic review team will have a multi-stakeholder team, but I don't think the contracting entity will have any kind of multi-stakeholder aspect to it. It's just going to be a shell company with a couple of lawyers that will just be signing contracts and that will act specifically on the orders of the IANA periodic review team.
That's the way I see it. That's exactly what I understood also. It's being described as a body without any board, and I'm told in some jurisdictions one could create such a body, and without staff. Somehow I would think there needs to be some staff somewhere, but nevertheless, I can enumerate some of my questions and concerns, and they cover some of those things. The first one is jurisdiction. Now, I'm not particularly hung up on jurisdiction, because there are plenty of jurisdictions in the world where, you know, this might be able to be done. But I see a significant problem in that there will be strong pressure from many parts of the community that the jurisdiction not be the U.S. At the same time, if you look at the questions that are raised in the U.S. Congress Kelly bill, and I'm not worried about the Kelly bill, but it does identify and put in writing, as Milton has said, the questions that may well be asked by the NTIA and by Congress. It makes it quite clear that they wouldn't accept anything that is not in the U.S. So that alone is a contradiction. I worry about capture at various levels. I worry about the fact that there's going to be costs associated with the corporation, with convening the multi-stakeholder group, and no one has addressed that. And the CCTLDs have made it clear they won't fund this. And the GTLDs have said they'll fund something, but only for their part. So we have another conflict there. I really question whether this kind of overall structure is going to be acceptable to both the ICANN board, and they may not have a veto, but nevertheless, and to the NTIA, who has very clearly talked about this as giving the contract to, implied giving the contract to ICANN with suitable accountability measures added. So this is quite different. I worry about integration with the other proposals. I worry about who's going to convene this multi-stakeholder panel and the other panels for that matter in a world where potentially it is no longer ICANN that has the contract. And just how is that going to work? There are just so many questions in my mind that don't have answers, and when there are answers, they don't seem to be acceptable. I could go on for a while, but I think that gives an overview. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Alan. And I think if I could virtually say yes, I probably would without interfering with you, but I totally agree with all of the points that you've made here. Eduardo Diaz is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add to that list a concern that you had at Frankfurt, Oliver, and it was the, what happened if that corporation or whoever is contracting gets sued? Who's going to protect them? That's another issue. Just to add to the list that Alan had.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eduardo. It's Olivier speaking, and indeed you're quite right. And one additional thing was what happened if such an entity, a contracting entity, disappears? If it fails, if indeed it doesn't get, if it gets destroyed in any way, as you mentioned, being sued, holding all the contracts, does this mean that when the entity disappears, there are no more contracts and the whole thing falls apart? It's an enormous number of questions, and I would suggest we need to put together a document which asks all of these questions and not let this whole thing move forward without having clear answers on these. I certainly don't have these, and they are very pretty large concerns, I would say. Alberto Soto is next.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Alberto Soto. Yes, I do agree with you. We all have the same concerns. I don't know if in the ICG these questions were raised. Perhaps they were raised, but no answers came up. I think that when all these questions are presented, perhaps the NTIA, if there are no answers to these questions, well, what might happen is that the NTIA will reject the proposal, will reject the transition, and that's it. So somehow we need to focus on that. We need to raise awareness. In order to avoid any rejection due to these concerns, because the concerns are within our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Alberto. It's Olivier speaking. I totally, totally agree with you. In fact, I think that this was raised as well. And again, there were no answers to this. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. I think it's worthwhile for people who weren't at the meeting and didn't follow it to explain how we got where we are today. I don't believe there was any malicious attempt by the people running the meetings to essentially ignore the issues that we raised. I think we just had a dynamic where there was always a long speaker list. So by the time, I or Olivier said something, when we finished, the next speaker, who was already queued up and ready to speak on a question that was asked 12 minutes ago because of the length of the speaker queue, and in general, they did not give a counter answer to anything that was said by the previous speaker. Occasionally they did, but very often went forward with what they were going to say to begin with. So major diversions of saying, hold on, we're questioning the overall structure, or how are we going to do things, often tended to get ignored. And I said, I don't think it was a malicious issue or a bad, necessarily bad chairing. It was just the dynamic in the meeting was focusing very much on the I guess the direction that had been set early in the meeting. So, you know, at this point now, when Olivier and I spoke at the end of the meeting, very passionately, I believe, it was a surprise to many of the people that we had, that we were disagreeing. They just hadn't heard the interventions along the way. And, you know, I guess we're at fault for not saying it strongly enough or forcing the direction to change. But nevertheless, that was the situation.
Yeah, thank you for this. Thank you, Alan. It's Olivier speaking again. I totally agree with what you've said. I wonder whether any of the people who are on this call and were not in Frankfurt have any questions, specific questions regarding the topic or both the characteristic of the entities and where we are and or any suggestions as to what should be done now. I realize we focused a lot on the problems we have, we as in the five members that were face-to-face in Frankfurt had with the contracting entity. I recall very vividly Fatima Carbonaro bringing forward the question on the jurisdiction of these entities or these proposed entities and being pretty much brushed aside and told, oh, this is not the sort of thing we need to discuss now. It's outside, nearly saying that this was outside the realm of the working group to work on, when really these questions are absolutely core to the main aim, which I think we should be constantly going back to, which is a smooth transition that does not endanger the stability of the domain name system. And I... not only now, but even afterwards, I have felt particularly nervous about the fact that there are some members that are that have an agenda of separation from ICANN that seems to be overwhelming the agenda of sticking to something that will be as stable as possible with as few changes as possible. We definitely appear to have this divide between those who want to change things and those who don't want to change things. The feeling so far, I think the line from the at large has been that we want to change as little as possible. But by saying that, we've been accused of saying actually that would be asking for the most changes if we wanted to change as little as possible. And it's just very confusing. Fatima Cambronero and then Alan Greenberg. Fatima, you have the floor.
This is Fatima for the record. Thank you, Olivier. Well, I fully agree with you and your comments. I just wanted to add, perhaps this might not contribute too much, but I have the feeling that after days has passed and after I have processed all the information, today we have an entity that would function outside ICANN, and this probably... or the first impression would be, well, this doesn't matter because it would be outside ICANN and it would not affect us. Even though when we say that it should be composed by multi-stakeholders and members of EACs and SO. However, I have the feeling, as I said in the chat, that if this is an entity and there is no legal, that it has no legal umbrella, it has no legal structure, therefore we should probably analyze in the group, if instead of having an entity with all the implications or with all the things this implies, perhaps we might have a function. And when we say function, perhaps this might change the structure. And I also think that when we have the final draft after the Frankfurt meeting, well, that was a general scheme, a general structure. That was okay, but now that we are going into details, well, we realize that there are many questions that have no answer, and perhaps not even the group is able to answer those questions. For example, you mentioned the example when I asked about jurisdiction. So that is my concern, and I will stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fatima, for this input. I see next is Alan Greenberg. And Alan, it would probably be of help if you shared a little bit of what counter-proposal you had brought forward and that was somehow lost in the details of the discussion in the face-to-face meeting. Alan. And you might be muted.
Thank you very much. Sorry, but I was muted. To add a little bit of clarity, everyone says they don't want any change right now. Things are working just fine, and they don't want to upset the processes that are working. Where the various positions change is how soon we would look for other options, and there are some people, based on the comments in the mailing list, that would like to see every 3 or 4 years go out to a full request for proposal and with the possibility of moving this completely outside of ICANN. You know, whether that would move each time or not is not clear, but certainly there'd be a significant amount of work involved. And again, we have this entity with no board and no employees creating an RFP. You know, who does the reviews of the RFP in this organization that doesn't exist or doesn't exist in any substance? So many, many questions. But yes, I will quickly review. It's what I imagined, and I suspect what NTIA imagined, but I have no insight into that other than my own guesses, is that NTIA would essentially grant ICANN the responsibility for handling IANA and would want to see ways to make sure that ICANN fulfills this mandate to the satisfaction of the world, the world's governments, the world's multi-stakeholders in all aspects. The situation that is typically raised as the one that people fear most is what is called a rogue board. That is, the board of ICANN, for one reason or another, decides to do things which are counter to what the community wants. And since ICANN in the current jurisdiction and perhaps in a future jurisdiction is has the board as the ultimate decision maker, how do you stop that? And the simple answer is, well, you can change the directors when they come up for renewal, and that, of course, is a many multi-year process. The kind of thing that I think might be able to be done is, number one, put rules on ICANN, on the board, that it cannot make certain kinds of decisions without significant lead time and notice. You can say there must be voting thresholds, that you need a certain number of directors approving something to do it, and you give the ACs and SOs the ability of withdrawing their directors, recalling their directors. That removes the critical mass from the board, so they can't take action. It's not a 100% solution, because that doesn't address how do you fix problems that are caused by inaction. You know, if, for instance, IANA was doing a really rotten job, as it was a number of years ago, or at least not a great job, and the board refuses to act on that, how do you fix it? And that's a good question, and I don't have an answer for that. So I don't pretend I have a fully fleshed-out answer. But I believe there are mechanisms the accountability group could come up with which would address this kind of problem. And, I think there are answers as to how it could be granted to ICANN in perpetuity, which would be a sin from the point of view of many people involved in this discussion. But I do believe it is possible to do it, and I think that's closer to what at least some of the parties envisioned when this whole thing came up. Thank you.
Thank you for this, Alan. It's Olivier speaking, and you touched on a good point regarding this supposed contracting entity having to issue RFPs and review bidders and things. it's again not clearly not such a streamlined structure. And thank you for sharing the your alternative or the alternative proposal, which we might wish to support. Alberto Soto is next.
This is Alberto Soto. Thank you, Olivier. We were talking about function jurisdiction, if it's going to be inside ICANN or outside ICANN. Well, I believe that this flowchart should have defined that, firstly, because if we're talking about a function within ICANN, well, that is possible because that would be within the ICANN's umbrella. But this, if this is going to be an outside entity, well, we will need to have an independent legal entity because it will not be inside ICANN. Therefore, those topics should have been resolved at the very beginning in the ICG before drafting these flowchart, because decisions that will be made regarding the IANA function and if these functions will be within or outside IANA, well, everything would change. So the two first RIRs that presented an opinion on this topic, well, they said we should continue because for us it works perfectly well. IANA works perfectly well. In the same meeting in Chile, they also said that transparency was required, therefore there should be a different entity. That is to say, entities or groups that need to present opinions are changing their opinions every time. So if the ICG had defined whether this should be internal or external, well, I think that now this analysis would be much easier. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Alberto. I have an issue that you've mentioned here. You said if the ICG had defined, do you mean if the community working group had defined, or do you actually mean the IANA coordination committee needing to define this?
Well, this is Jean-Jacques. Could I take that up?
Yeah, Jean-Jacques, you can take that up afterwards.
This is Alberto Soto. Alberto Soto speaking. I am referring to the ICG because when they plan, all the primary things should be taken into account, and then the analysis should come. And in this case, it was just the other way around. Jurisdiction will be discussed later. Then we will decide if this will be internal or external. But those decisions will change the work that is being done right now. Thank you.
Thank you for this. Let's have Jean-Jacques Subrena.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques. In response to Fatima's remarks, I'd like to say a few things. The first is that...
It was Alberto Soto.
The
ICG...
was
Alberto's remarks.
Oh, sorry, Alberto. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. the first remark is that the ICG didn't consider, when it was set up, that it had the authority to prejudge the form or the legal setup or anything else, in fact, concerning the transition mechanism. Like Alberto, I believe that this should be done at some point, but it is not now, I think, the task of the ICG as such, because the ICG has made it clear over the past few weeks, in fact, 2 months, that it is not in the business of defining by itself what should or should not be the general shape of the transition plan. It said very clearly that it would assemble the contributions from the communities and, working on that basis, would propose a plan reflecting faithfully the views of the communities, but it would not be a separate thing invented by the members of the ICG. Thanks.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques. Fatima Camonero.
This is Fatima for the record. Thank you, Olivier. I have a question regarding the previous comment, Alan's comment. And perhaps this is a possible scenario. My question is this. The document reads that the contracting entity would be an entity outside ICANN. Is it possible that this entity would be an outside entity, but it would be created or formed by ICANN and the community? So perhaps this is created or this is composed by ICANN and the community and not ICANN the corporation. So does this change the point of view? Perhaps this will not solve our issue regarding jurisdiction, but I am trying to think about this, and I don't remember exactly which the discussion was regarding this point, whether it was ICANN corporation or ICANN community, but I'm just trying to understand the whole issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Fatima. It's Olivier speaking. My recollection is that this wasn't even raised. I mean, this point was not even discussed. None of the jurisdiction, none of the composition of the contracting entity parts were discussed. Just principles. Principles are on the screen, as we can see, and that's all there is. I might be wrong. I might have dozed off during part of the discussion. I asked perhaps, Alan, would you have any... Does anyone who were there have a different view as to what was discussed and what wasn't? To me, yeah. It looks like these are huge questions which are not even touched on yet. Alan?
I can try to answer that to the extent I understand. It certainly can't be ICANN itself creating the corporation. That would effectively be a subsidiary of ICANN, and a subsidiary of ICANN cannot grant a contract to ICANN. So it's got to be an organization. The entity has to be completely outside of ICANN. Now, who is going to oversee the creation of it? Well, the ICANN multi-stakeholder model with a few other people added on, perhaps representing some governments or the non-affiliated CCNSOs, are the only game in town. We are the multi-stakeholders that are involved in this. So as individuals or as organizations, we would somehow have to be involved in this. Who the owner of this new corporation is I don't understand. You can have membership organizations, but every time we've described a membership organization, no one can come up with what I would consider an acceptable set of members. Other than that, you typically have shareholders or somethings who are responsible for an entity and who incur the liability if that entity does something, that is found illegal or something like that. And these have all been, at this point, either ignored or treated as details to be resolved. And as I've said earlier, I think if you have enough details that are unresolved, the overall thing has to be brought into question. But these are all really good questions. And I haven't seen any answers. There may well be answers, but I don't know what they are.
Thank you, Alan. And I realize we spent a lot of time. It's Olivia speaking. We spent a lot of time on the IANA contracting entity. We haven't spent much time discussing the IANA periodic review team. That seems to be a multi-stakeholder team. It doesn't say entity in its title. And yet some are saying that this would be some new entity as well, a completely independent entity. And that's, of course, equally as important as the other entities, because that's the part of the whole process that can make the decisions on whether to renew or not renew a contract, because that's the part that performs the review. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. Yeah, I did mention that very briefly in my overall rant. It was suggested by one of the chairs, the co-chairs of the group, that this CWG or an entity or a group very much like it could be the multi-stakeholder review body. And I don't disagree with that. The question is, in a world where possibly ICANN is no longer the contractee for IANA, who convenes this group? Who ensures that it is multi-stakeholder? Who ensures that it's not captured? And none of those questions, you know, were addressed as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, thank you, Alan. So, recognizing that we have now spent over half an hour on this and sounding it more like either a cranky wheel or we're all just absolute whiners and just whining away as in being unhappy and so on, I would suggest perhaps that we put these things on paper. There was a question as to whether it would be useful for us to have this on paper before the first draft was going to be out, and I just don't think it's going to make that much difference. We definitely need to see first what is going to be in that first draft coming out. But Alan, you did say that you had committed to putting your thoughts down in writing. How could we sort of think of this in the next week or so, that we all put down our concerns in writing and then we'll put a document together?
Certainly you'll see mine be, well, at this point, given my schedule and the fact that the paper is late, I don't really feel comfortable, having thought about it, putting out anything until I see a document in writing, because I don't want to critique something that where in the end the words they committed to paper were different from what I thought they were going to be. So I would want to see that paper first, which hopefully will be coming out today. I will certainly commit by the end of the weekend to having done it, hopefully before that. But yes, I certainly am committing to putting something on paper, because I don't think I personally can, and I'm not speaking on behalf of the ALAC or even the members of the review team, and you recall I was there as a substitute, not a formal member. But I certainly will put my personal ones to paper, and other people can pick it apart and tell me what I got wrong or indeed support it. Thank you.
Thank you for this, Alan. It's Olivier speaking. Maybe one action item would be for all of us to put our thoughts on paper or concerns on paper and share in our own working group. I'm not saying a consolidated position so far, but we can share our own concerns. There is a fair bit of repetition between our concerns, but that would then be a first step into the ALAC being able to formulate a response during the forthcoming public comment period, and that is certainly a good first step forward. Jean-Jacques Subrenin, you have the floor.
Thank you, Olivier. This is Jean-Jacques. I'd like to make a general remark. I should have done so a few minutes ago, but I was late in putting up my hand. I'm sorry. It had been mentioned at all in our discussion today, but I think that one should keep in mind, excuse me, a geopolitical fact which is behind all this. Let's imagine that the U.S. government was not so keen, for whatever reason, to embark on this path of stating that it was prepared to transfer the oversight of the IANA functions to something which does not exist and which has to be invented. Well, I suppose that it would be fair to say that one of the outcomes the U.S. government was envisaging, even if it didn't say so, if it was not spelled out, was that the communities and the final ICG proposal would be so contradictory in its parts and also so difficult to implement that in the end there would be a sort of rough consensus to let the whole thing go and to come back to the current system, which is Washington has sole oversight over the IANA functions. So I just want to remind us that we should not forget this as a possible outcome, and perhaps it was also part of the calculation of the United States government when it made its proposal in April. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Jean-Jacques.
Any other comments on this?
It's Alan. Sorry, I can't put my hand up right now. I must admit I disagree completely with Zhang Zhao. Yes, it's conceivable that was part of the calculation and the hope that the community could not come together. I really do not. I'm not cynical. I'm pretty cynical, but I'm not cynical enough to believe that was the overall intent. I think for a whole host of reasons, the U.S. government, or at least the part of the U.S. government currently in power, decided that this was something that whose time had come. And I believe they are actually hoping that this will work. But as I said, maybe I'm not sufficiently cynical. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Jean-Jacques Chebrenal, next.
Thank you. Just in response quickly, Alan. Alan, both you and I have some experience in all these areas. I really would advise against using the word cynicism, because a cold-headed professional geopolitical analysis can surely not be taxed.
I think we might have lost Jean-Jacques. There was some breakup for a while, and then I didn't hear the rest of his sentence. Jean-Jacques, c'est bon?
With cynicism, it's just...
Yeah, Jean-Jacques is heavily breaking up at the moment, and we are not able to hear you, unfortunately, or at least I'm not. Is Jean-Jacques sounding okay with everyone else? No, okay. All right, I realize time is ticking, and we've spent 45 minutes on this. We have some important questions to answer. There are just three of these, and I wanted to try and find out if we could find answers to these quickly. First, with regards to the NTIA backstop function, should this be retained? Now, the NTIA backstop function is the function where it just has to rubber stamp any changes in the route by saying, yeah, that's fine, that follows the procedure. It's the sort of thing where it basically checks whether everything is running fine, whether the trains are running on time, and whether the procedure which was used follows all of the policies that is supposed to be followed. It has the potential of blocking a transfer and so on. Governments are asking for a replacement for this. What's the feeling here regarding a backstop function? I don't see much response, so let's put this over to the side and let you all think about this for the next call. The second one is to do with a contracting function. There's a big discussion currently going on the community working group regarding a limitation to the length of the contract, having an open and transparent contest involving an RFP every single time, and also whether there should be a presumption that the contract should be renewed with the same entity by default, and of course the current entity being ICANN. Some are saying, no, we should have a brand new RFP every time and put everything back into question. That would improve accountability and certainly put more pressure on the entity that's doing the work. Others are saying, no, that would introduce all sorts of questions and certainly introduce instability and would therefore have the chance of stopping investment into the function and therefore ending up with a function that is performed badly or that would not be performed the way that it should. So there are two different points of view, and I thought we need to also make up our minds as to which we would be favoring, certainly in this working group. First is Fatima Cambronero.
Thank
Thank you, Olivier. This is Fatima for the record. When it comes to your question and when it comes to the comments in the list, and this is my personal opinion, and I might be wrong because perhaps I am not right in my understanding. The contract should have a limited duration from my point of view. In my opinion, the first contract post-transition should have a certain duration, a shorter period than the rest of the contracts. For me, it should be shorter because from my understanding, the first state would be subject to further controls, and we should assure the stability with this new contract. Probably the duration of this first contract should be 3 years, and for me, the following contract should have a duration of 5 years according to the reviews and according to the discussions. This is a necessary period to recover the investment or for the return of the investment. And in my opinion, there should not be a presumption for automatic renewal, but there should be a new RFP for each contract. This is my opinion so far. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Fatima. So 3 years initial, 5 years renewable in the future. Alan Greenberg next.
Thank you very much. I don't have a strong feeling on the number of years. As some people have said, two years is too short. 7 years is too long. You have to be able to take action when there's a problem. But I would definitely want to see the contracting entity, this nebulous, non-existent group, be able to take a decision that everything is okay, we will renew. It should be able to, as the NTIA has done, go out for public comment and say, are there things that you believe we need to change in the contract? If everyone is happy, if no one has any idea of what should be changed, then I see no reason for issuing another RFP. It's a costly endeavor. It's a time-consuming endeavor. And if we're not targeting to try to fix some problem or improve something, I cannot justify why we're doing that. So I would definitely want to see the contracting entity have the ability of going out for an RFP, have the ability of asking the community for input, but not being required to do that on a regular basis. Asking the community for input, I wouldn't mind doing on a semi-regular basis, but not necessarily requiring an RFP, that it have the ability to either renegotiate a contract or to simply renew the contract. Thank you.
Thank you, Adam. Next is Eduardo Diaz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My opinion on this is that since we want to keep things as simple as possible, I don't know the details of the actual way NTIA does it now, but whatever entity gets this should follow what is in the what NTIA is doing now. I'm not sure if they do it every 3 year and they do a tender or they do an RFP every time. Whatever is in there, we should do the same thing now and maybe change it in the future if it's too bordersome for and expensive to do otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you, Eduardo. It's Olivier speaking. And I think the NTIA was issuing RFPs on each occasion, but with an understanding that I'm not sure how that was structured, whether ICANN had a preferred status or first mover advantage or something into that. Alan, do you know by any chance?
No, I don't, and I need to check that. My recollection is that they are not obliged to. We're not obliged to do a full RFP, but they chose to at the most recent juncture. But I don't know that for sure. Remember, this has not been going on for that long. That the first contract may have been for a period of time with certain number of renewals. That this is the first time they were obliged to, or it may have been a conscious choice. I haven't looked into it yet.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. It's Olivier speaking. I believe that there was
review, et cetera, of the performance and of the overall function. But indeed, yes, the last one, and I'm just saying this from memory, there was an open request for proposals, and then the NTIA put more pressure on ICANN by saying they didn't find any of the proposals good enough, and so they asked for another round. But we might have to look at this and look at the way that this was done. Alberto Soto is next, and let's have an action item for, I guess, me or staff, if we can find the process by which the recent renewals were made by NTIA. So check the process by which recent renewals of the INA contract were made. Alberto Soto, you have the floor.
This is Alberto Soto. Thank you, Olivier. Well, I think there was not an RFP. There were amendments, I believe. There were two important amendments. One was in 2013. However, what we must take into account when it comes to the duration of the contract is that this is not just a legal aspect. We also need to take into account the functional aspect. So far, IANA functions are being carried out with no problems. I mean, very small issues in certain areas, for example, when it comes to domain names or CCTLDs. But these are functions that cannot be interrupted ever. So the contract should take into account if a contract should be terminated, and if that is the case, who will be in charge of that contract? And if that happens, how this termination will be carried out? Because, as I said before, these are functions that cannot be interrupted. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Alberto. And you're very right. And I think this goes into the details, into more detail than what we have at the moment. The flow charts themselves, such as the operational review and also the periodic and a performance review, provides some insight as to what would happen, but definitely no details, and there doesn't appear to be any details of the contingency, as in how the actual functions would be transferred one way or other. It just says implement decisions of IANA periodic review team, and there we are, we're done. I don't think we have any time to go into this right now, unfortunately. Next is, who else do we have? Oh, we don't have anyone else in the queue. We've got a slightly better view now for these questions. I wonder, anyone who is not from on the call, but who didn't go to Frankfurt, have any point of view on this specifically as well? I see Alan Greenberg again in the queue. Alan?
Indeed, once again, I just wanted to point out, I don't think the AI is correct. We're not looking for what the process is. We know what the process was. The question is, to what extent was that process required, mandated, driven by the contract, the earlier versions of the contract, or the internal U.S. government NTIA rules for issuing contracts?
Okay, Alan, it's Olivier. Let's just then rephrase this so as to make sure we've got the action item right. So staff to check.
I do have something in the comment.
I've dictated that one. That's how I dictated it. So that must be wrong then, the way I dictated it. Staff to check the process by which the recent renewal of the IANA contract was made. We know the process, but we want to find out if it was with a request for full RFP. Is that correct?
I put a comment in the chat, which I think captures what I believe we were asking.
Okay, so here we go. Regarding, to what extent that process was mandatory, has to do with the terms of the earlier contract and with the extent of internal NTIA U.S. government rules for issuing contracts. That's a much more complex request you're asking here. I have concerns that these are all legal things, and of course we don't appear to have professional lawyers helping us specifically or particularly knowledgeable about those. Let's keep it as this, especially when extent the process was mandatory. Does the current action item now echo what you think we should have?
Yeah, I'm happy with that. I don't think it's that complex. I think it means going to look at the earlier versions of the contract, and I suspect when the NTIA went out for comment or an RFP, their preamble will say why they're doing it, but I haven't looked at those documents myself.
Okay, thank you, Alan. So we still haven't really got answers to the important questions we've been asking here. One more here is the link with the accountability process. What would we prefer? How would we want this? And do we support the following statement here? This transition must not take place until the requisite accountability mechanisms have been identified by the CWG on enhancing ICANN accountability, which is the working group that is in formation at the moment. The mechanisms that the community determines are necessary pre-transition have been put in place, and C, agreements and other guarantors are in place to ensure timely implementation of mechanisms that the accountability cross-community working group decides may be implemented post-transition. Some of the members of the group are asking for this, and that closely links the accountability process with the process here. What's the feeling in our working group here? Alan Greenberg.
I think the question is moot. NTIA has made it quite clear they are not going to transfer without sufficient accountability. That being said, other than the new appeal mechanism, using an external arbitrator, if we are simply going from one contracting entity, the NTIA, to this new contracting entity, I'm not sure ICANN needs a lot more accountability. It's working now. Why would we think it isn't working later? I think the accountability team's work is going to be really simple on the short term if this proposal goes through as it is right now. Unless the accountability group is given the responsibility of answering all these questions, in which case we have a real problem.
Thanks for this, Alan. Next is Fatima Cambronero.
This is Fatima for the record. Thank you, Olivier. Well, I do agree with the text on the wiki and the text established by the working group, but I would like to remind you, for those who haven't read the text, that there was a comment by Milton Mueller saying that this should be related to track one for the accountability working group, who will be in charge of this. I don't know if we have to take into account track one only, or if this should not be included. This is a question perhaps we have to debate, but I do agree what we have been proposed. Thank you.
Thank you for this, Fatima. That's helpful. Indeed, track one is the track of the accountability cross-community working groups that will be working specifically on the issues relating to IANA. One concern that I have is that in a discussion, a side discussion that I had with Teresa Swinehart, it appears that the understanding at board level at the moment is that the accountability track will produce its work, will only join up with the work that we are developing here when the two proposals or the two component parts of the proposal will be sent by the board to NTIA. I'm baffled by this because to me it looks like we are dividing this whole process into the two tracks, and it's the ICANN board that is going to be putting them together. This doesn't make sense. Anyway, we'll have to work more on this. I note that we are at the. We just have one more minute until the end of this call. A quick mention of RFP 4 and RFP 5. There was a call of RFP 4 that took place yesterday. RFP 4, it looks at the transition implications.
And of course, the only way you can look at the transition implications is by having a copy of RFP 3, of the first draft of RFP 3. Without such a copy, there wasn't very much progress that was made in RFP 4 yesterday. And then finally, we have received a request regarding RFP 5. That's the validation of NTIA requirements. And one of the questions is, so this, the consultations within communities that have taken place to date. And I believe that this will have to be, well, what we can do is to share the fact that we have shared survey with our community, and we probably need to be engaging more with our community. We'll obviously be speaking about the webinar that we will have in a couple of weeks' time, and we might even design a survey by then. I'm not even sure. First, of course, we have to look at RFP 3. Any comments or questions regarding these last points? I wonder if there are any members of RFP 4 on this call that could give us any further details if anything else has happened, because I'm certainly not a member of the mailing list, so I'm not sure whether there has been much traffic in there. Fatima Cameronero, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Olivier. This is Fatima for the record. I am a member of this group. Yesterday we had a call, and I was not able to understand much. I'm sorry for that. I apologize for that. But I know that Alan, and I don't remember his surname, it is not our Alan, it was another Alan, he sent an email to the list where he has structured the different parts of the contract to work on that document. I was not able to read that information. I have no details to share with you, but there was also a comment by Carolina Aguirre saying that we could structure the contract in terms of the priority and we should focus on the most important parts or the urgent parts of the contract. However, there was not much movement because we first need the RFP 3 to start working, and that's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Fatima. And speaking of RFP 3, I believe that we have received something in the mailbox of the community working group. It doesn't look like the RFP. No, it is the initial draft. Alan? Sorry, Eduardo. Sorry, Ed. Eduardo.
Sorry, I got my other speaker on. This is Eduardo for the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add to Fatima, I'm not in the RFP for mailing list because I'm not part of that group, but I participated in the meeting yesterday, and it seems to me that there was no substance. You know, there was a lot of talk, and at the end, it was suggested for Robert Guerra, to put something out, like bullets, so we can start, and the RFP 4 group could start filling up some of the bullets with whatever information they have now, and obviously they have to work very, very diligently, I don't know if that's correctly pronounced, during this weekend. Once they get the RFP 3, then they can have some substance to the RFP 4, because they have to show, or they're going to have something put in the final proposal for December 1st that was going to go out to the community. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Eduardo. It's Olivier speaking, and realizing we've reached the end of this call. The document, the final copy of the first draft, I guess, is now in our mailbox. It's just arrived about 5-10 minutes ago, and Fatima has forwarded it over to our working group. Thank you very much for this, Fatima. There is a call tomorrow of the community working group. And so Jonathan Robinson has mentioned in his email, cover email, that this document will be discussed tomorrow. I encourage you all to read through it and to make your comments on the list, and then tomorrow we can
push those comments. Now, with 5 minutes beyond the end of the official closing time of this call, I think it's a good time for us to finish it. I thank the interpreter. Any other business from anyone? And Fatima, is that an old hand? New, please go ahead, Fatima Cambronero. You have the last words for this call.
This is Fatima for the record. This is just a brief and personal comment, but I would like to publicly apologize because next week I will be participating in the MAG meeting in Geneva, and I won't be able to attend the meeting of this working group. I won't be able to participate in the meeting and do the follow-up. I know there is another meeting of the cross-community working group, but I would like to apologize, and I will do my best in my free time to follow up the debate and comply with the action items if required. Thank you.
Thank you, Fatima. Is the MAG taking place the whole week?
This is Fatima for the record. No. It is from December the 1st to December the 3rd. But I am leaving on Saturday, and then I will take another day to come back to my country. So for me, it will take a week, even though the meeting is only 3 days.
Okay, thank you, Fatima. So it's Olivier speaking. What I would suggest then is, seeing that you will not be able to make any of the calls next week, there is another community working group call on the 4th of December, as far as I see in my agenda. So if we could have a doodle for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so the 1st, the 2nd, and the 3rd of December, to find a suitable time for us to speak ahead of this call, we will be able to review the discussion that took place, that will have taken place on the on tomorrow, the 27th of November, and we will be therefore able to follow up on the call afterwards. And with this, meeting was cancelled. Oh, the other meeting. Okay. Sorry, I thought Alan was just saying the meeting was cancelled. Okay, fine. Well, thanks to everyone for this. Thanks to the interpreters, and for any of you that are celebrating tomorrow's feast in the U.S., Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. This call is now adjourned. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines. Have a great rest of your day, and thank you for joining.